I'm going to talk about CSRES land grant, NRCS partnership, and aligning programmatic goals in support of IPM. And I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I'm not Mike Fitzner. Okay, unfortunately, Mike's mother had heart surgery, so he had to remain back closer to home in case there were some further emergencies. So he gave me pleasure and liberty of talking about whatever I wanted to. So I'm going to do that today. So it's probably fortunate Mike isn't here. Does the other one back up? Okay, the outline of the presentation, I'm going to give you a little background to how I got involved with this mess. And then I'm going to talk about IPM implementation from a national perspective. And then Mark Parsons is going to talk about IPM implementation from a state and local perspective. Now, a few weeks back, Mike Fitzner planted a seed, and he asked me if I would consider getting involved with taking our agency's lead in strengthening the partnership between CSRES, NRCS, and the Land Grant and University System. So we held a meeting, and the more I got into the discussion, the more it seemed that maybe there might be some structural elements of the National Invasive Species Management Plan that could be applied to NRCS conservation programs. And coming from a systems analysis background from Berkeley, I thought, we need a model. So I met with NRCS National Program Leader, technical staff, and a few of my CSRES colleagues to discuss the model. Here's a little bit about the program structure for the National Invasive Species Management Plan. The National Invasive Species Council. So this all arose out of the executive order on invasive species that came out in February 1999, established the National Invasive Species Council, co-chaired by the Secretaries of Commerce, Ag, and Interior, also comprised of the Secretaries of State, Treasury, Defense, Transportation, and Administrators for EPA and USAID, and more recently, Department of Homeland Security and NASA. They also authorized the formation of an advisory committee called the Invasive Species Advisory Committee. Now, this is all made up of federal agencies, and these are all non-federal folks with a wide array of interests represented at the table, from the pet industry to aquaculture to you name it, all kinds of research, education interests, and beyond.
How do you make money uneasy for the next thing? What do they know?
What's that? I'm not sure. The National Invasive Species Management Plan originally had 57 action items, and these are being reprioritized. But they have a whole bunch of subcommittees, and so we can think about maybe an analogous model that we could use in addressing conservation programs and IPM implementation. So some of their subcommittees include leadership and coordination, prevention, early detection and rapid response, control and management, restoration, international cooperation, research, information management, education, and public awareness. Now, we all share a common theme here in that greater implementation of IPM will help all of us advance conservation and natural resource goals. And I thought maybe some of the key elements might be a balanced exchange of issues, information, and knowledge. Certainly more training would help in IPM implementation, better coordination at the county, state, and national levels, grow awareness of relevant conservation programs and IPM adoption, and then evaluation of impacts and outcomes. In a more conceptual form, here's our balanced exchange of issues, information, and knowledge, maybe some subcommittees, and the subcommittees for the National Invasive Species Management Plan are made up of two co-chairs, one that's from a federal agency and another co-chair that's a non-federal agency person, so NGOs or non-government organization person. Okay, we have the NRCS-CSRES interface, we have federal coordination, and two types of training at these giant conference centers. I know some of the NRCS staff have recommended that they maintain some degree of on-site training for site-specific development of conservation plans. with different scenarios. We'd have another type of training called distance training that's web-based. And then certainly evaluation scheme to evaluate it all. Now I think we should all strive to make things as less complicated as possible. And remember, this is one of my classic, one of these classic old Rube Goldberg models of his mustache wiper. So I hope to not make things more complicated than need be. So I propose the conceptual model. Okay, sorry about that. I did. Sorry about that. So here's the IPM Advisory Committee. I'll just go through the elements here. Now this would be the non-Fed entity. We'd have subcommittees that would address gaps in education, control and management, maybe extension, green payments, research. We need maybe a sociologist to help us implement IPM programs. We might even need a psychologist if we have Mike involved here. Okay. Okay. Then we need federal coordination, so we have the Federal IPM Coordinating Committee. This is made up of all federal agencies. We have the NRCS, CSRES interface. We have two types of IPM training, again on-site for conservation plan scenarios, distance delivered through the IPM Training Consortium. And I'll talk more specifically about this in a moment. And then some evaluation scheme to evaluate impacts and outcomes. And believe it or not, there's already a big push to develop logic models. I don't know if all of you are familiar with logic models, but it's a big thing in the federal government these days to develop a logic model of everything so that we have performance-based measures and short-term, intermediate, and long-term inputs and outputs and outcomes and impacts. So those are all very critical. Now how would this IPM Advisory Committee work? Well, what I would propose is that individuals, let's just go around the ring here. These are some of the entities that might reside on this committee. Maybe some representatives of pest control advisors and certified crop advisors, North American independent crop consultants, Rangeland IPM, Invasive Species Advisory Committee member, Cropland IPM, professional societies, entomology, plant pathology, weed science, agronomy, industry, Cattlemen's Association, IPM nonprofits, tree fruit IPM from the West, North Central, and Eastern, sociologists, IPM centers, including the Western, North Central, Northeast, and Southern region, maybe some of the environmental groups, the Nature Conservancy, Natural Resource Defense Council, Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, and others. So this is just a number of them, and obviously we need a number of other different entities to serve on this. I didn't want to make it any more complicated than it is. Okay. Okay. How would they make it on this committee? Well, these are all again non-federal entities. So I would recommend that we have an application system. So if somebody wants to serve on this committee, they submit an application to the Federal IPM Coordinating Committee, and it's reviewed. And if you have appropriate credentials to represent your constituency, then you can reside on this committee. Now, the advantage of having a system like this is NRCS has a lot of folks that are interested in their conservation programs that are trying to encourage the agency in moving in one direction versus another without a lot of coordination. And so by having a system like this, any information that's discussed and exchanged and issues that are raised and knowledge that is exchanged goes forward by consensus, not by the process of who's the vocal minority. Okay? And this would keep it cricket with FACA. This would be a FACA-compliant committee. And the FACA is the Federal Advisory Committee Act. And the reason that it was put together was to make sure that no group in particular could get an advantage over another group in advising the government in a way that would benefit their own special interests. So in this way, it would be collective thinking and advising the government by consensus. And I think it's a much better way to do it. Okay? Then we'd have our NRCS, CSRES interface here, IPM training on-site, an IPM training consortium that could service the state technical committees to make sure they're all aware of the principles of integrated pest management. The extension IPM coordinators could serve as a system for training the trainers. And certainly IPM training could be provided to NRCS staff, county agents and specialists, soil and water conservation district staff, and perhaps the technical service providers. Now, just a few remarks about distance-delivered training. That seems to be a big topic these days. I've been involved for the last few years with my co-chair, Mark Aserno, who's in the second row here from University of Minnesota, and then a whole bunch of other colleagues from other universities, as well as some federal agencies, in developing the IPM Cube Training Consortium. And this is a three-tiered training program for IPM that consists of the first tier, the core IPM Cube module, pest biology elements, and then the third tier are specialty topics. Now, the core IPM module includes basic concepts about IPM and IPM implementation. It will include 12 to 18 hours of instruction, and it would be a prerequisite for any pest management certificate. This would get everybody on the same page as far as the principles of integrated pest management. The next tier deals with pest biology modules, and these would include things like entomology, plant pathology, weed science, and vertebrates. 6 hours of instruction would be required per topic, and at least one module would be required for a certificate. The third tier would include specialty modules, and these might include structural, landscape and turf, invasive species, rangeland weeds, commodity-specific IPM, weeds of natural areas, and special needs, like for museums and historical buildings. Now, some of the agencies like the Forest Service, National Park Service, Fish and Wildlife, they have historical buildings, and many of them have wall hangings that have special dyes in the fabrics. You just can't use traditional pest management approaches on these things. It may just totally damage these historical elements of the buildings. And so they have very specialized needs. The individual specialty modules will be 6 to 12 hours apiece, and a certificate of completion will be awarded for each specialty module. Here's an example of a weed management certificate program. Everybody takes the core IPM. If you were involved with or interested in biocontrol of weeds with insects, you'd certainly want an introductory background in entomology and also weed science. And then you take the rangeland weed specialty module. Here's an example of structural pest management certificate program. Everybody takes the core IPM, probably need entomology and vertebrates in this case. And then, then you take the specialty module for structural. Here's probably one of the more complicated ones, landscape and turf. Everybody takes the core IPM module. You probably need entomology, plant pathology, and weed science. If you had areas that were invaded by nutria, and this is some people call it a giant rat that's invaded a lot of the riparian areas, especially in the south, you may want a background in vertebrate biology as well. And then you take the landscape and turf. So in that way, you can truly tailor your training to your pest management needs. It cuts the fat out of all the training. And any specialty module could be developed to service the training needs for IPM implementation through NRCS. How is this program delivered? We have IPM Cube modules will be delivered up via online web CT and Blackboard. There'll be progress and evaluation that'll be tracked. We'll have an internal email for contacting instructors, and Adobe Presenter and enhanced PowerPoint will also be utilized, and lots of video for specialized training. And this past spring and summer, Mark and his co-worker from University of Minnesota were taking footage all over the country in different National Park Service settings to get video footage to include in the training programs for some of the National Park Service modules that we're developing. The benefits of IPM Cube training, current expert content, electable topics to address agency needs, cost effectiveness, asynchronous online delivery, a consistent IPM message across agencies. The IPM Steering Committee is co-chaired by myself from Washington, D.C. I'm the National Program Leader for Bio-Based Pest Management with CSRES, and Marcus Cerno, he's the head of the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota. Here are some of our educational institutional partners, Mark and also Mike McDonough from University of Minnesota, Steve Yonanick from Purdue, Rob Wiedemann from Arkansas, and Doug Jardine from Kansas State University. Our IPM Steering Committee federal agency partners include Al Green from General Services Administration, Carol DeSalvo from the Park Service, Doug Holy from NRCS, yours truly from CSRES, Tiffany Partisans from the Fish and Wildlife Service, and Roger Sheely from ARS. The implementation schedule at the moment, we will have beta versions in spring 2008 of the core IPM module, 1 to 2 pest biology modules, structural IPM module, structural IPM for managers module, and we have invasive species and IPM for seasonal workers under development. We'd appreciate your help in the development and assessment of existing modules and the identification of pest management training needs, and certainly the identification of future modules that will be needed down the road. And here's contact information, and that's all I have. Thank you very much. Okay. Oh, for my part. Now we have Mark Parson that's going to talk about IPM implementation from the state and local perspective.
Okay, thanks. I'll be brief. That was really exciting, that diagram. And I was very interested because I even talked to our national pest manager at Washington. He was excited about it too, so it must be a good thing. Regardless, if you look through all the boxes and the idea and the big picture about what Bob was trying to explain there, those are the kind of partnerships and collaborations that we like to see. And we need to have more of this at the national level. And we talked extensively about that, Bob, about the need for additional input and influence from CSRS and others, just like we do at the state and local level. And I'm not going to go into detail about the state and local level because I think for the most part I've covered those issues in previous presentations, and you'll find it in the documentation, the seat at the table. So take a look at those. The fact is that we need to keep an eye on the big picture of what we're talking about here. And if I can wrap up to a certain extent, I want to say, you know, it's easy to be pulled into specific kinds of little issues, I call them little sometimes, and concerns and problems. We know that we can develop good partnerships and collaboration and have successes on the ground. These kinds of you know, ways of addressing these kinds of things and getting input is ways of guaranteeing that as well. And I'm excited to see about this. I had not been, I saw the presentation earlier about this. Jonathan, this is something that might be suggested in terms of TSPs to getting that level of expertise documented to a certain extent. You know, we always know there's going to be a certain level of legalese and bureaucracy and technical gaps. And importantly, especially with the 2002 Farm Bill, the level of, shall we say, involvement by a lot of folks in these programs administered by our agency has identified a lot of competing interests. And if I were to say that the agency was slightly naive at all levels, local, state, and national, I can say that, I think, without hesitation. We had no idea in certain circles that these programs would grow as much as they had. And we have to grow with them, and we have to understand how to make a balanced approach and balance decisions with all the different funds and limited resources that we have. Folks, there are a lot of folks, people at the table wanting us to redirect to different directions. And you know what? all of their concerns are important. They need to be considered. It's not, believe it or not, IPM isn't the only thing on the table, although I bet you guys would agree with me on that, but there are other important things. You know, we live in this global world, and we keep hearing more and more about all the impacts nationally and worldwide that are impacting our future. We do need a balanced approach, not just in how we manage the programs, but a balanced approach in how we work with growers. We like the holistic approach. It takes in as much as possible in the thinking process to identify all those different kinds of resource concerns that we want to the extent that we can include IPM in that systems approach, in that thinking process, whatever you want to call it. It goes all the way back to Alan Savory, if you knew him, and a holistic approach on range management and so forth. I mean, we've grown with these kinds of things, and there's different spins on it. Every farm bill and every politicized time that we deal with dollars. So let's take the high road, and again, we thank you for inviting us here. We do appreciate your input and interest in our programs, and we will continue to try to hone them to make that balanced approach so we're taking care of our future and our land and for ourselves and our children ahead of us. Thanks.
We are winding down, but if there's a couple of questions from these last couple of speakers, please, Walt.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with cost effectiveness. I mean, don't I have to put somebody up for lodging, travel? What's that now?
That wasn't cost effective.
The what wasn't? Absolutely, you do. Well, let me just make a remark here. I think the advantage of such a system, I don't think you have the ability to tailor training to all these specialty needs all across the country. I think there are site-specific needs and even individual-specific needs, depending on what this entity is, that this system could deliver more effectively.
That doesn't
make sense. Yeah, Gary. Well, a lot of it.
Better than the people in the States can.
Yeah, you want to answer, Mark?
Yeah, one of the. I think you're talking about the IPMQ program. If you look at that, the content development are by individuals in states around the country. They are ranked rankers, teaching people. They're content specialists. It's not a federal agency, it's still a consortium of land grants, faculty members that are putting the content together and then delivering online in a way that allows people to do that, take that anywhere they are as opposed to going to a site and having to spend the money to travel, put up room and board and so on. And so from that standpoint, it is cost effective. And it doesn't supplant the land grant training commission. It just provides another avenue to get more people trained.
We did this in the long run. We actually bring bringing students into a program that provides training ready when they came out, instead of having to train someone that's already in that. I mean, this is what we need to build right now. We're talking about PSD and all this. We're not getting students in. What can we do to make that campus more attractive to these programs, so when they go out looking for a job, they feed it in our field, and then you make the judgments themselves. They don't have to have a cookie cutter to make that judgment. They are trained in the ability to take each situation individually and make the judgment. That's what we should be doing.
Well, I think there are a lot of different levels of training that are needed. You know, they aren't all the same. And that's the advantage of this system. But I, as Mark said, the way that we envision these modules coming together is that the consortium will provide upfront resources for content development. If anybody in the land grant system or even a private company or a federal agency wants to act as an instructor, then they'll get resources coming back. It'll be all fee-based, which will generate resources that'll be sustainable over time. So after a while, the program will be sustainable and self-sufficient. Yes?
Larry?
The situation that Walt's describing is analogous to the situation that I've seen in South Carolina. And actually, the test time for a conference. Web-based tools are the perfect thing to do. But someday, somewhere, the farmer making a decision to change something on that farm is a personal decision, and it's something new, it's something that one person talks about. There's conservation program, the lowest kind of programs. So I would be very uncomfortable, and maybe this is where it's coming from, if this is a plan. Our understanding of the need for that. Whether it's a district conservationist talking to a farmer and saying, you know, we've got a good pest management program in there, it's going to work. You know, you really maybe want to start getting those jobs out of the state. It's a relationship that we want to have a relationship with the city. So, if anyone believes that we can deal with our technical assistance problems and our gaps, I put in the website probably not to be able to do that. And that served the ability of people to do it with part of the individual, yes. And I'd be very effective by applying it. As a matter of fact, we had a proposal that was turned down. Mark Andrews, I think this is a project he was proposed to do a street plan as well, which one of the reviewers said, you just don't, this is a traditional extension program that recommends farmers doing on-farm meetings and stuff like that. And this proposal would be far better off and should be refused, turned down, because it doesn't include web-based learning and e-meetings. And I don't know if any of y'all did this. Eastern North Carolina, we have 2 days. There aren't a whole lot of e-meetings in this North Carolina. So it's really to support what Walt said here. We're not ready to supplant it, and maybe you'll ever
Well, I think it's an important tool that will make a major impact, but it's certainly not going to, I think it'll actually recharge the county extension system and link them with the NRCS staff. I think there are a lot of neat things that could happen, and the trainer programs or the IPM extension coordinator. I think this will only strengthen the partnership, not tear it apart or supplant it.
Yeah.